Hello. In this audio snippet, we'd like to continue talking about music and the things we were discussing in the previous recording regarding Taylor Swift and the death of American music. But before that, we'd like to talk about some other things and miscellaneous things and I found it interesting that most of the things that we wanted to discuss before continuing with the music topic, a lot of these things have to do with death. And I think it's not a coincidence. And even though these things seem unrelated to the topic we want to discuss, I still feel the strong need to share these things, and I do believe that somehow they are, at the end of the day, related. They're all part of this big thread and or theme, somehow. So the first thing is that we'd like to talk about is some things, some headline stories related to Israel and Hamas and the things that have been going on at the time of this recording, in the conflict there after the October the 7th terrorist attack by Hamas on Israel, and this so the first thing is a story that that was posted on the Daily Mail, and let me see if I can for some reason I'm having trouble going to that link right now, but. It's a story on the Daily Mail that I saw the other day, and it kind of bothered me because it had a picture of Jared Kushner. So the headline says, Jared Kushner says American Jews are safer in Saudi Arabia than U.S. college campuses after woke students backed Hamas's bloodbath in Israel. And this story was posted on the 29th of October, 2023, a few days ago. And the story had this, at least on the front page of the Daily Mail on their webpage, it had a picture of Jared Kushner. And there's something about him. There's a deadness in his eyes. I don't know how to explain it. There's something not right with him. And also, there's a certain effeminate quality to his motions, his movements, effeminate in a very disturbing way. It is bothersome. There's something not right with that that man. And as we've said before, the fact that his family owns or had control of a building with the number 666. 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, New York is, I know it's not a coincidence. There's something evil about that animal. There's something not right about him. So I'm going to briefly read the first few paragraphs of the story. It says, off the back of a trip to Saudi Arabia, Jared Kushner said that American Jews would be safer visiting the Islamic monarchy than on liberal U.S. college campuses. Former President Donald Trump's son-in-law and once close advisor is Jewish and helped facilitate the Abraham Accords during his work with the administration in an effort to bring peace to the Middle East. He said there is, quote, enthusiasm from Saudi Arabia to join the agreement. The reason why I'd like to bring this up very quickly is, first of all, we were talking about the futility of the Abraham Accords and all those efforts that Trump did through this worthless son of a bitch, hellbound son of a bitch, and he kept Trump kept talking about how what a great job he had done. And that all his great work had been undone by Bite Me. But the reality is that he did a lot of surface stuff through this worthless bastard. But it never dealt with the root issue. The root issue was the situation with the Jordanians, known as the Palestinians, aka Palestinians, but they're really from Jordan. That's where they originated from. The problem between them and Israel. And if you don't deal with that, everything else is just surface stuff. And the same people that signed these accords ended up signing with Hamas against Israel. So nothing was gained. It's all just emptiness. So the fact that this worthless bastard who's been off the news for a long, long while, other than just pictures of him and the whore Ivanka, you know, walking in Manhattan and stuff like that, in these paparazzi type pictures of them. Aside from that, I had not heard or seen anything about them for quite a while. And for him to pop up and appear, it's as if Trump is saying no. It's like a reaction to what we've been saying, in a sense, in these audio recordings, confronting the emptiness of what Trump did through this bastard, this man who had Trump's ear and misled him in so many ways, in so many profound ways. The fact that, you know, it's interesting, this story says Donald Trump's son-in-law and once close advisor. So it's that that it's like the reinforcement of how relevant this bastard was in Trump's time in the White House, and I know that it was through him that Trump made a lot of the mistakes that he made, opening himself up to be controlled by Tony Fauci and all these other people. I know it was through this bastard that it happened. So he surfaced to justify himself and to emphasize once again the greatness of the futile efforts that he carried out, meaningless efforts. They accomplished absolutely nothing. That's just one thing. I found it interesting that he surfaced after we've been talking about him and cursing him and basically calling him a spawn of the Antichrist. The other thing that we wanted to, the other story we wanted to mention that's related to Israel and Hamas is a story on the Yahoo.com news website. It's apparently from Bloomberg, and the title of it is "How This Israel-Hamas Conflict Is Like Nothing That's Happened Before." It's by Lisa Bayer, posted on the 29th of October, 2023. We just wanted to read this, the first few lines of this story, just to emphasize something, or reinforce something we said before. It says, "How this Israel-Hamas conflict is like nothing that's happened before. The long history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is filled with bloodshed, dislocation, and trauma. But even by those relative standards, the current conflagration stands out. For one thing, it's especially brutal. Not since the Holocaust have as many Jews been massacred at one time as were on October the 7th, when Hamas militants stormed Israel, killing 1,400 people and taking more than 200 hostages. Before Israel escalated its ground operations in the Hamas-run Gaza Strip, its retaliatory strikes, mostly from the air, killed more than 7,700, according to Gazan authorities." Oh yeah, they're very reliable Gazan authorities. "And dislocated nearly half the population of 2.3 million by an estimate of UN officials." So, you know, they start with the initial explanation of what happened, but then obviously they also want to make Israel look bad, and that's how the story goes. So we don't care about that. But the thing is that we wanted to emphasize that initial part that they mentioned. "Not since the Holocaust have as many Jews been massacred at one time as were on October the 7th. See, as we've said before, the Holocaust was this final payment that Israel had to make to make up for its stupidity, its long-running stupidity. Once the Holocaust happened, then the door was open for them to have a homeland again because they had paid the price. And once they paid the price, they were miraculously given this opportunity to be reborn out of nowhere. And then they were miraculously protected from attack after attack after attack, defeating odds after odds after odds, like a David fighting a Goliath that was trying to destroy him and succeeding once and again and thriving in the midst of such difficult circumstances. But it got to the point that Israel began to think that they were they had the right to claim victory because of how great they were. In other words, they were taking credit for their victory, attributing it to their own greatness and righteousness and abilities, and in the meantime taking advantage of the followers, according to them, of the false Messiah, who have been helping them and enabling them, and they were receiving the help, but without being willing to say, okay, maybe this is not the false Messiah, maybe this is the real Messiah, and we messed it up 2,000 years ago, or taking the other stance, saying no, we're not going to receive help from the followers of this fake Messiah. We're going to stick to our guns, and we're going to fight it out on our own, because if we are in the right, then our God will be supporting us. But they know that it's always this kind of like having your cake and eating it too, and then claiming credit for their own success instead of bowing their heads and bending their knees and recognizing that they were lucky, or the word's not lucky, but they were fortunate to be in the situation that they've been in, thriving despite everything. So they, because they didn't learn their lesson from what happened in the Holocaust, then a massacre, unlike anything seen since the Holocaust happened on October the 7th, 2023. And they still don't get it. They still don't get it. And as we said before, after 70 years of Israel being alive on earth, the nation of Israel being reborn, after 70 years, the veil of protection was taken away from them. And now they are uncovered. And they will be exposed to attacks like this going forward until they bend their knee and recognize their own stupidity and their own arrogance, their own self-righteousness. And this happened now that America, its biggest protector, the nation that has been the biggest follower of, and I'm using their terminology, the biggest follower of the false Messiah, their biggest protector, is now dead. It died between September the 6th and September the 18th. And 19 days later, boom, they get this massive attack. But we just wanted to emphasize that this was no normal attack, because people could say, oh, well, there have always been terrorist attacks in the Middle East and people dying and bombs going off and missiles being launched at Israel and all that. But this was very different. There was something very, very fundamentally different about this. There was a violation, a level of violation that Israel had never experienced before in its history since being reborn in 1948. There was a violation, a deep violation. And it was this proof that the veil of protection has been removed. And you're on your own, baby. You're on your own. You think you're that good? Let's see you. Let's see you survive on your own. And that doesn't mean that this is a validation of what Hamas is doing. No, Hamas is cursed. They're both cursed. Israel is cursed. And Hamas is cursed too. The worthless murderers and bastards and terrorists, they're also cursed. At a deeper level, you could say, than Israel. But that doesn't take away from Israel being cursed and being and having brought this on themselves. Not because of how they treat the Jordanians, aka Palestinians. That's not it. The problem with Israel is not that they have mistreated the so-called Palestinians, or that they have not enabled a Palestinian state. That's not the problem. It's completely different. That's what is so frustrating, that people take sides, but they take sides for the wrong reasons. And no one is connected to the truth, apparently. And that's why the problems never get solved. The underlying root issues are never dealt with. And that's why we are where we are at this point in history. And the other story we wanted to share related to Israel and Hamas. And we wanted to share this just to rub it in to the worthless conservatives in America. Cursed are they. This story that was posted on JNS.org, which is apparently Jewish news syndicate. And the headline reads, Russia, Israel, Russia, colon, in other words, Russia saying, Israel has no right to defend itself against Hamas. And then it says, this story, by the way, was posted, well, it doesn't actually, oh yes, it says November the 2nd, 2023. It says, Ambassador to the UN, Vasily Nebenzia, however you pronounce that, claims Israel is occupying the Gaza Strip. Israel does not have the right to defend itself, Russia's representative to the United Nations said on Wednesday. The United States and its allies are hypocritical for talking, quote, about Israel's alleged right for self-defense, which, as an occupying state, it does not have. As was confirmed by the UN's International Court of Justice consultative ruling in 2004, unquote. Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia told a UN General Assembly special session on the Israel-Hamas war. This is so funny, if it weren't so serious and sad. It's so funny at so many levels, because it's a Russian ambassador condemning Israel for being an occupying state, right as they're in the middle of trying to occupy their neighbor Ukraine and take more territory from them. It is just so ironic. It's like, how can these people say this without us, you know, without cracking up, you know, with a straight face? It is ridiculous. That's one thing. But the reason why we wanted to share this is, this is Russia, the nation led by Vladimir Putin, the hero of the American conservatives, the one who, the brave champion of anti-woke values, who is challenging the evil ten-headed beast of the European Union and the Antichrist spirit, and he's rising up to defend Christian values. They say all, and I'm not just exaggerating, that's what they say about him. I mean, almost literally. They see him almost as a defender of, quote, Christian values, and a return to common sense and masculinity and blah 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 blah. And they've taken the side of Russia against Ukraine because Bite Me and the liberals have taken the side of Ukraine, and they've taken it for reasons that have nothing to do with anything. But it's as if conservatives go, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So they have artificially propped up, instead of going to the truth and asking, truth, can you tell us what this is all about and where we should stand and see things for what they are, instead of just going by labels and going by superficial factors and arguments. without getting to the root of things. They've taken a side, and now they say, okay, we're going to go with Russia because apparently the Democrats want to go with Ukraine. So they forget the historical things. They forget about the Cold War. They forget about the Soviet oppression of Eastern Europe. They forget about 1989. They forget about their other hero, Ronald Reagan, saying, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. They forget about all of that. And they start praising Russia. And now Russia is showing its colors. It is not this wonderful nation fighting for freedom. And they are opposing Israel and siding with Hamas. And I say to myself, will a conservative look at this, an American conservative, and kind of put two and two together and kind of realize that son of a bitch Vladimir Putin is not the great hero, protector of your traditional European values, Christian values that they claim him to be. But no, they're not going to do that. So these people who are living, as we said before, in fantasy land, and who are not getting to the root of issues. That's why they fall prey to so many deceptions and false concepts, and unsustainable points of view. In other words, points of view that cannot be sustained when you scrutinize them under the light of truth. So that was the first thing we wanted to talk about, these three stories about Israel and Hamas, which kind of point to this theme, that people not getting to the root of the problem, and dealing on the surface and never dealing with the actual things that need to be dealt with in their minds or in the world. So the other thing that we wanted to talk about follow that same thing of not dealing with the root of anything has to do with these random stories. One of them is one posted on the Gateway Pundit, and we're going to mention it very quickly. It says... it was posted on the 30th of October, 2023, and it's on thegatewaypundit.com, and the headline reads, "Evil sex offender gets knocked out by his victim in Nevada courtroom after receiving sentence with no jail time." So it says a 29-year-old Nevada man who was sexually abused by an evil pedophile as a child knocked out his tormentor after a so-called judge gave the sick man a sentence which included no jail time. It says here, eight News Now revealed on Thursday, I guess that's Channel 8, eight News Now revealed on Thursday that 80-year-old Richard Gross was in a Clark County District Courtroom for his sentencing on October the 2nd. Gross pleaded guilty to one felony count of attempted lewdness with a child under the age of 14 and received a suspended sentence from Judge Tierra Jones. Tierra, which in Spanish means earth, Tierra Jones, which allowed him to remain a free man. Gross was given a suspended sentence of 60 to 180 months in the Nevada Department of Corrections, which means he will not be in prison unless he violates the terms of his probation. Tyler Fu, which sounds like a Chinese surname, whom Gross abused from ages 8 to 15, helped secure his perpetrator's conviction after testifying against him. After the so-called judge gave Gross a slap on the wrist, Fu decided a punch in the face was more appropriate. And then at the end, Fu was the one who got arrested for misdemeanor battery. So it's ironic that in that whole thing, the one who ended up in jail was the victim of the whole thing. Fu was just outraged. Now, the reason why we want to mention this story is again, you know, you read these stories, the conservatives read these stories, and they are outraged. You know, it's understandable. I'm outraged too. But they never go beyond the surface outrage, to get outraged at the consequences of things. But they never wonder, well, how did this happen? And then we go back to the same thing we've been saying, and we've been saying this repeatedly in many of these audio snippets, that there's something fundamentally wrong with the judicial system, the judicial branch as it was set up by the founding fathers in America. It is so... and so poorly defined, so poorly fenced in. I don't know how to explain it. It's like it has no fence, and it just grows to whatever it needs to grow or wants to grow. And because no one said we need to contain this branch and define it and define its role and its function, we've tried to describe before what that function more or less would be like. It's a referee function. It is a referee that just enforces the rules. It doesn't have special powers of its own. The problem is that judges are constantly doing all these things, you know, pulling things out of their butt. You know, they go to the bathroom, they come out, and they say, this is what I came up with, and they show it to everybody, and this is how it is. And there's no accountability. And if you want to hold them accountable, then you have to go to another judge and appeal the decision. So it's also, so there's nothing outside of the judicial branch. There's nothing you can enforce on the judicial branch to rein them in or hold them accountable when they do things like this. Well, what can be done about this other than to, I don't know, go to some other court and appeal this decision? It's the randomness. There's a certain monarchical quality to judges in America, in the American system left by the founding fathers, where the judge feels like the king, the almighty. You know, he's like, he is Jehovah God in the courtroom, and he decides whatever you know, he wants, and that becomes the law, and no one can question it. So this judge decides this guy will get a slap on the wrist. Why? Aren't there laws clearly defined that establish, you know, that if you do commit such a heinous crime, that you are to be put in jail? Why can the judge decide, oh, we're just going to put him on probation, he can go off scot-free. Oh, he's 80 years old, poor little guy. You know, let him, he's going to die anyway, so why make him suffer? So we are all outraged, but no one says, okay, let's have a fundamental redefining of the judicial branch and how it works. There's none of that. So yes, there's outrage, there's frustration. I feel bad for this man. Who felt like he had no recourse but to punch the guy in the face. He really, literally had no other recourse. And he felt like, okay, if I don't do this, this guy's not going to get punished at all because the judicial system is not going to help me in any way. And there's nothing that anyone can do. And then the legislative branch, when it sees things like this, does nothing about it either. There is no... the system is broken. So no one gets to the root of the issue. We all complain about the consequences of the roots, the fruit of the root. We criticize over and over again, but no one says, okay, let's get to the root of the issue and yank that sucker out of the ground. No one does that. And that's why America is dead. It's just another example of the same thing. And the other story we wanted to mention and it's related to the same idea to what we just said about the legislative branch never doing anything about things, just acting like almost like a symbolic symbolic entity, and it only seems to act when it's trying to do destructive stuff, but when it comes time to putting a stop to the bad things that are going on, it just acts like a symbolic organization. That's how the legislative branch in America acts and has become. So we're going to read this part of this story on thegatewaypundit.com again, and it was posted on the 3rd of November, 2023. And the headline says, House approves resolution condemning anti-Semitism and support for Islamist terror organizations on college campuses. Here are the 22 Democrats and the sole Republican who refused to denounce these despicable acts. So they passed a motion by, I think, a vote of 395-23, this resolution. And it says here, a common sense resolution condemning support of terrorist organizations and anti-Semitism on college campuses. But what should have been a unanimous vote instead had more than a handful of notable dissenters, including one Republican. So they go on about that and they're condemning all these protests, pro-Hamas protests in college campuses. And it says, part of the resolution says, quote, hateful acts of anti-Semitism are spreading like wildfire across American college campuses. That's not in the resolution. That's what someone said. Owens, one of the representatives from somewhere, who knows where, said on the House floor during Wednesday's debate on the resolution. So why are we sharing about this? There's several reasons. First of all, who cares? It is a non-binding just statement. It's a symbolic statement. This is what you would expect from Queen Elizabeth when she was alive. A symbolic figure that has no power, does nothing, is not interested in doing anything. You know, Queen Elizabeth was the do-nothing queen. And she was like Queen Victoria Part Two in that sense. She was more Queen Victoria II than Queen Elizabeth II, because the first Queen Elizabeth, that was one decent monarch, probably the second greatest monarch in British in English history, second only maybe to Alfred the Great. And I sometimes have a debate which one goes first, but I think Alfred the Great would win by a nose. But the thing is that the Congress in America is just, you know, they're just a symbolic entity, just issuing symbolic statements as if it were the Queen of England. And that's all it is. And on the things that it needs to do stuff, it doesn't do a thing. Why isn't it looking into the issues of judicial activism and overreaching and trying to define laws to put boundaries, why aren't they discussing potential amendments, constitutional amendments to change the judicial branch? They're not into any of that. When it comes to the debt ceiling and budget deficits, no one says, okay, let's end the charade every year doing the debt ceiling raising musical or theatrical performance, you know, every year the same thing. Instead of dealing with the root issue, how do we deal with the budget? What concrete things can we do to finally end this spending nonsense? They don't do anything. So when they do something, it's just to issue a meaningless statement that has no binding power. It does nothing. And instead of condemning that, why aren't they proposing ideas on how to end the conflict in the Middle East? And as we've said, the solution is not the two-state thing. It's a one-state thing where the Arabs in that territory are absorbed into the Israeli nation and are guaranteed rights as citizens, as long as they obviously uphold the rights of their fellow citizens. Because if you violate the rights of your fellow citizens, then that makes you subject to your rights being constrained. But the thing is that there is none of that. So they just issue this empty statement against anti-Semitism and blah, blah, blah. And that's the end of that. And the interesting thing, is that the one Republican who objected is a guy called Thomas Massie from Kentucky. And he wrote on X or the Twitter or whatever it's called nowadays. He wrote, "I am no on House Resolution 798. Free speech means protecting speech you don't like, not just speech you do like. Also, who defines anti-Semitism? AIPAC made a ridiculous claim that the tweet below against foreign aid to Israel was anti-Semitic." And I see his point. I actually see his point. And in fact, I'm not offended because we're talking about a resolution that does nothing. It means nothing. It's empty. And it's, you know, what is so annoying about this is that they attach the term anti-Semitism to this because it's a label that everyone can rally around. That's all it is. But it's never dealing with the root issues. It doesn't matter if Hamas is killing Jews or what. It is committing acts of terror, and it's doing it on the foundation of lies. Why isn't there a resolution condemning all the lies on which the Palestinian problem is founded? That would be an interesting thing, interesting resolution, even if it's non-binding. But all of this is just nonsense. And yes, I mean, we have the concept of free speech here, but it's now ironic. What I find ironic is that he stands up for free speech by voting no on this resolution. But what has he done to fight the curtailing of free speech in on you know on the social quote, I hate that term, social media websites or on the internet in general? What has Thomas what's his name? Massey done about that? Again, they talk all this stuff, all the symbolism, but no one gets to the root of the issue and deals with it. Okay, why is it okay for you to condone the you know these horrible rallies and say, yeah, I hate them, but you know they are free speech. So you stand up for free speech when it comes to that, but you don't stand up for free speech when it comes to people being censored and being shadow banned and being demonetized, or people having their bank accounts canceled because of their political views, or for saying things that are not, consistent with left-wing liberalism. Why isn't Thomas Massie proposing a bill that would punish banks for closing accounts of people based on political reasons? If he's so much for free speech, see what I'm saying? No one deals with the root issues. Just everything is surface, surface, surface. No one deals with the fundamental things. That's why America's dead. As we said before, we talked about the gag orders that judges issue, and including the gag order placed on Trump in one of the many trials against him. And you again go, okay, who? Pardon my French, who the hell gave judges the right to issue gag orders, and who legislates or controls them? What legislation is there to define what a valid gag order is, and why should there be a gag order at all for anything? Well, you say, oh, well, it's because you don't want to influence public opinion. Well, okay, for example, Trump cannot say anything about his trial, yet people on CNN, on MSNBC, and all these left-wing websites are constantly bombarding the audience with anti-Trump arguments related to that trial. So these people can bombard the public and influence public opinion because that's what the gag order is. We want to protect the public and prevent people forming an opinion before the trial. Well, the opinion is being formed by countless people speaking against Trump. Why is the gag order only applied to Trump and not to the people in the press? Why shouldn't, if the principle is the gag order is to prevent public opinion being formed and a potential jury pool being contaminated before the trial, why isn't the gag order issued on the press as well? And that just brings up this bigger issue. Well, oh, that's a limitation of freedom of the press. So there we go. That's what it is. A gag order is a limitation of freedom of the press. It's a serious oppression of that freedom. And if it has to be done, there has to be a metaphysical justification for it. Who has given it? No one. Who gave judges the power to issue gag orders? Is there something in the Constitution that says that? I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. Or is there a bill that was passed back in 1798 saying that judges have the power to issue gag orders? Maybe there is one. I don't know. I don't think so. See, why did they have, who gave that power to judges? You know who gave that power to judges? Judges. They gave it to themselves. That's how they ended up with the power to issue gag orders. They said, oh, we are the Lord Almighty here. I decide what happens or doesn't happen in my courtroom or in anything related to the trials that I run, because I am Jehovah God here. So I'm going to decree that, hey, you can't say anything, and you can't say anything, and you can only say this, you can only say that. And you go off scot-free after having molested kids. I'm just going to give you a slap on the wrist because I am Jehovah God in the courtroom. And no one can do a thing about it. So these judges have given themselves powers. And speaking of that, there's another story that we wanted to share. And I'll try to be very quick about this. This was posted on November the 2nd, 2023, a couple of days ago, on the gatewaypundit.com again, and the headline says, report, Congress sneaks through $34,000 pay raise for itself. Then they kind of explain what it is, and I don't want to bore you with the details, but I was surprised to read somewhere in this article at the end of it. And by the way, this apparently was originally posted on the WND News Center website. But at the end of the story, they say congressional rules allow lawmakers to expense up to $258 a day in lodging and $79 per day in meals without having to submit receipts. Who does that? I mean, $258 a day. I mean, believe you me, that's a ton of money. I can tell you that's a ton of money. And $79 per day in meals. I mean, $79? I mean, it's like, are you feeding like a football team every day to spend $79 a day? And they can just put it on the tab, you know, on the congressional tab. And the American people have to pay for it. This is ridiculous. And so they give themselves a $34,000 raise. And on top of that, they have all these perks. And we've said before, one of the ways to change not only influence the budget deficit or deal with that issue, but to also change the culture and the environment in the American government system is to have a constitutional clause that says no government official can make more than 1.5 times the national average without and no benefits, nothing. We said it before, no Cadillac health insurance, no nothing. Just if the average American household makes $60,000 a year, they can only make $90,000, and it's cash. That's all they get. They get it in cold hard cash, nothing else added, no extra perks, no nothing. You have to live on $90,000 a year because most of the American people, the average American person, has to live on 2/3 of what we're paying you right now by paying you $90,000. So just deal with it. And if you want to buy health insurance, that's your problem. No benefits, no perks, no nothing. That's how it should be. And I can assure you, just by that alone, you're going to filter out a whole bunch of people will no longer become interested in politics because it will just be, oh, so you're saying I'm going to have to go to Washington to serve the people? Is that what you're saying? That I'm going to be like a servant, getting these measly $90,000 a year? Yes, it would just change, radically change the culture of Washington, or whatever city. And by the way, one thing I wanted to say very quickly, it was interesting as I thought about it, as the colonies were dying and began to realize what each colony represented, that Washington, D.C. is wedged between Maryland and Virginia. Maryland represents the server personality of America, the potential for the proper development of the server personality. And Virginia represented the organizer personality, which are the two female personalities, as we've repeated over and over again. And it's interesting that the capital of this country was placed between the two female wedged, because Washington, D.C. was carved out of land taken from Maryland and Virginia. I think mostly Maryland, I think, but also Virginia. But the thing is that Washington, D.C. is stuck between is wedged between the two. And it was almost like a symbolic thing that we were dead from the get-go because we were founded on a matriarchy, wedged between the server, the female personalities of server and organizer. And interestingly, Washington, and I mean the guy, the president, he was inaugurated in New York because the capital, for all intents and purposes, of America was New York City, when the country started. And New York, the colony of New York, represents the conqueror personality, which is a male personality. And I think before that, most government stuff was based in Philadelphia, which is in Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania represents the judge personality, again, another male personality. So we started, as you could say, and we should have kept the capital in a male personality state, shall we say. But when we moved it down to between the server and the organizer, it was almost a symbolic kind of, it was a sign that we were founded on matriarchal principles and that we were eventually going to collapse. And collapse profoundly the way we are collapsing now. And I think that's also the reason that why the door was open for the British to come and burn Washington, D.C. in the War of 1812. They burned Washington, D.C. I think they burnt the White House and all that. And I think it's because Washington, D.C. was on shaky ground, on shaky moral or metaphysical ground, shall we say. So the thing is that but I, that was an aside just regarding Washington. I just hate saying people who go to Washington because I believe that if America had survived, one of the things that would have happened eventually is that we would have moved the capital back to New York or Philadelphia, and taken it out of that hellhole called Washington, D.C. But the thing is, in that new America, in that new capital, wherever it would have ended up being, the culture would have changed just by doing that one thing alone. And it all goes to the issue of, if the founding fathers were so brilliant, why didn't they just put in a clause to certify that there has to be a limit on how much government people can pay themselves? Because a government job is the only job where you define your own salary. I mean, it is so sad. I can't decide how much I want to make, in the job I'm in, unless I'm the CEO, which in that case means I'm the owner. I own this place. Well, the CEO doesn't own the place, but I mean, if I am the owner of a company, I can pay myself as much as I want because it's my company. It's my personal domain. But in this case, but in a normal job, you don't define your own salary. And in government, it's the only place where employees can define their own salary. They can vote themselves a raise. Why didn't the founding fathers, who were so wise and so aware of the corruptibility of human nature, why didn't they put in a clause to prevent that? Let me just read this here very quickly in this article. It says, the report said, quote, Representative Matt Gaetz, he's a Republican from Florida, received the largest share of funds out of any lawmaker, unquote, having billed taxpayers nearly $17,000 from January through May to pay for his D.C. living expenses. So, again, we go to the same thing. Matt Gaetz, the hero of the conservatives in the House and probably the sanest of them all, and he's the one who's spending the most. So no one, it's all surface stuff. No one is dealing with the root issues. Why doesn't anyone say, okay, we want to start curtailing the budget deficit and we're going to put it into law and we're going to propose a constitutional amendment to limit the salaries of all government employees. I know that would create an uproar, but don't you think the political consequences of that would be like a humongous earthquake striking the land, because all these government officials that would rise up and say, oh, how dare he do that? They'd have to face people, and the American people would say, that's a great idea. And all the people who would get angry at that would face a political backlash. It'd be a political earthquake, and it would have had so many consequences in reshaping the culture, political culture of America, and also dealing with the budget deficits and all that. But it's all surface stuff. So the thing is, in this article, you know, they're bitterly complaining about, you know, how these Congress people give themselves a pay raise, but at no point does the writer or anyone reading this article say to themselves, what is the root cause of this? Oh, because Congress can assign its own salary. That should not be right. Why doesn't anyone say, well, should anytime there's a pay raise, it should be put on the ballot, like, you know, they do in California, proposition this, proposition that, proposition the other. Why don't they come up with any thought, any ideas, anything to deal with the root issue? They just, pardon my French, they just bitch and moan about the problem, and no one does anything about it. No one does anything in terms of actions or thoughts or ideas on how to deal with the root issues, because no one cares to listen to the truth. So we're like a nation of blind people. We're a nation of blind mice, just feeling the doors. Kind of makes me think of, you know, the story in the Bible where the Sodomites were, according to the Bible, were on the door of Lot's house trying to break in, and the angels did something to blind the people, and the people were walking around, you know, like blind mice outside Lot's house. And that's what America has become, just a nation of blind mice, and no one is dealing with the root of anything. The country's dead, and it feels like we're beating a dead horse, but it needs to be said anyway. But as time goes on, the less will need to be said, because it will then become an unnecessary beating of the dead horse. So I don't think we're going to get to the main topic that we wanted to get to, but so these things needed to be said. But now we want to share something else, and it's kind of related in some way, and we'll try to be very quick about this. As some of you may know, at the time of this recording, there was this big story about a person who died, at least in America. I'm not sure how big the story was outside the U.S. In Europe, they might not know him as well, in the U.K., for example, but they might. The headline that I want to read is related to this person who died. It was posted on the 29th of October. Again, on thegatewaypundit.com, and the headline says, Matthew Perry's post promoting, quote, could I be any more vaccinated, unquote, shirt resurfaces after Starr's death. So this guy died, And he was 54. He was pretty young. He had been battling, you know, drug abuse, but apparently he was kind of cleaning up his act, cleaning up his life, and things were looking up and everything. And then suddenly he drowned in his jacuzzi, I think, and he died. And when I heard that story, the first thing that came to me is, okay, he died. I for some reason didn't think that he died of a drug overdose. I don't know why. It looked like the way he was changing his life, that from what I had been hearing or reading about him, it just didn't feel like it was a drug situation. It just didn't feel like that. My first thought was a heart attack. And then after that, the injection. And I said, okay, this guy got injected and the blood clot got to him and he had a heart attack and he died. He got on, into his jacuzzi, was taking this, jacuzzi break or whatever, and he just had a heart attack in the middle of it. He was by himself, and he keeled over, and he drowned, and he died. And I knew it was a heart attack. And then I started reading more about the circumstances, and they were saying that in the days leading up to his death, his friends were saying how he was always out of breath and getting tired very, very quickly. And he had been playing pickleball that morning, I think. It's a sport that's apparently it's now all the rage in America. But the person who was playing with him was saying that he was kind of winded and tired and all that. And I started reading comments from people saying that's usually how people feel before a heart attack. When their heart is giving out, they show these signs of exhaustion and all that. So that all of that confirms that he had a heart attack. And I said, oh, this guy must have been one of those stupid people who was promoting the injection. And lo and behold, that's what he was. And apparently I had always, Matthew Perry, for those who may not know, was an actor famous for his role in situation comedy show in America called Friends. And to be frank, I always hated that show. I resented people liking it. I resented it with a passion because there was something very matriarchal about that show. Even in the 90s, when I didn't have that full understanding of matriarchal personalities versus, masculine personalities and all that. There was something about it. It was all about sociability and emotions and all that. You know, that culture that we have now, that very matriarchal culture that is fostered by the server personality of communion, emotional communion between people. And it's all about relationships and community and feelings and sharing our feelings and all that stuff. And that's what Friends was about. That show, even the name, Friends, that relationship at the very superficial emotional level. So I never watched it. I did get to watch a couple of episodes years later, and I said, well, it is kind of funny. It has some good stuff in it. But on principle, I always objected to the show. So he represents all that matriarchal social behavior that has just become the mainstream of the American culture. And it was a big factor in America dying. And apparently in this show, he had this catchphrase, could I be any more blah, 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 fill in the blank. So it was like a catchphrase of his. So that's why he had this t-shirt that said, could I be any more, blank? And I thought when I read the headline, maybe he was being sarcastic about it. Maybe I misjudged him. But it turns out that he was not being sarcastic about the quote vaccination, the rape by injection. He was actually using that phrase to promote it. And he even posted a picture of himself with a shirt saying, could I be any more, vaccinated? And then on Twitter, which was called Twitter at the time, I think, He posted something saying, you know, go and get your injections and blah, blah, blah. So he was not being sarcastic. He was promoting the injection. So, you know, when I read that, I realized, okay, yeah, this guy deserved to die, you know. When I see people like him, you know, what I do is I wave at them at their picture and say, bye-bye, bye-bye. You know, there's no sorrow, no sadness, oh poor guy. You know, all of his friends, co-stars are in emotional turmoil right now, all depressed and sad and crying and all that. And all I can say is bye-bye, you know, bye-bye, and I just wave my hand and go bye-bye, because there's no mercy that he is deserving of. He contributed to the deaths of thousands of people by promoting the rape by injection. He contributed to the deaths of thousands of people who have been dying like him. He got a taste of his own medicine, the medicine he was handing out. I have no mercy for him, absolutely no mercy for him, no sense of sadness or sorrow. Oh, poor guy. No, he had it coming. And he is an example of that superficiality that we have in America. This guy was, and apparently he was a quote nice person, and I don't know, he must have done humanitarian work or whatever and all this, but it's all surface stuff. He never dealt with the root issues of things, because if he had a mindset that was focused on dealing with the root cause of things, he would have delved into the whole thing and wondered, why are all these people dying suddenly? And why did this start to happen coincidentally, just as the injections became prevalent? No deeper thought. It was just emotion. Why? Because everyone is saying, oh, I got injected, and doing the bicep thing and showing their little band-aid, I got injected. Oh yes, awesome. And it's all emotion. So he got caught. He felt the need to connect himself to that emotionalism, and to be part of the group, and to be part of of that social wave that was promoting the injection, because it made him feel good. It was all emotionalism on the surface. He never did critical thinking. Never said, okay, let me ask the truth. The truth will tell me what is really going on here. But no interest in it. It's all just dealing with emotions and what makes me popular, what makes me welcomed by others. Never what is right, what is wrong. So that he's a symptom of that, that a life that's focused on social stuff. And okay, so now that we've said that, let's share some other things that are related to the death of America. And I feel the need to share all of this, and we may have to talk about music and all that, and Taylor Swift in another recording. I'm not sure, but we'll see. The other story we wanted to share on very quickly, and these are deaths that I see related to the death of America. And just like Matthew Perry's death is related to the death of America, there's this story that came out on the 30th of October, 2023, again on the gatewaypundit.com. And the headline says, Los Angeles model found dead in her refrigerator, bound and gagged. And she's a model, a black young lady. And her name is, it says here, Melissa, Malesa, Melissa Mooney, 31, was found dead inside her refrigerator with a severely beaten body on September the 12th. So that's when they found her body. And I found that interesting, because September the 12th was the day that the seventh colony died, which was the colony of Delaware. And when that colony died, the seven extended personalities of the human being were all killed off in America. Because there are five like fundamental personalities that we keep mentioning over and over again. Judge, visionary, conqueror, they're male personalities. And then there's server and organizer, which are female personalities. And this has nothing to do with your biological maleness or femaleness. You can be a conqueror and be a biological woman. It's just qualities, personalities. So the thing is that those are the five, and then there are two that I call wildcard personalities that combine with those five to form like a seven extended personalities. And those are the personality of the dreamer. The dreamer who dreams big dreams whilst in the middle of smallness. And then there is the prosperer personality, this personality that kind of draws prosperity to it, almost like without any effort, and brings an environment of peace wherever that personality manifests itself. And those two personalities are wild card because, unlike the other five, these are kind of personalities you willingly adopt. The other five are you're born with them, and you can get an impartation of them from others, in a sense, but you're more or less born with them. The other two are almost like you choose to be that, and then you embrace it, and you just take it, if that makes any sense. You just take it. It's just like, do you want that? Yes. And it becomes yours immediately. So those are the seven personalities. In September the 12th was the day that the last of those seven extended personalities were killed off in America. And that's the day they found her body. And what I found interesting also is that, if I can find it here, in this story, they also mention another date. Here we go. Police did report that an unidentified man was seen using Mooney's key and carrying plastic bags into Mooney's apartment on September the 6th, which was the last day Mooney was spotted alive. So that was the last day she was alive, and I would dare say that was the day she was killed, which was the day America died. The first colony, Pennsylvania, died on September the 6th. So her death spans those seven colonies. And I know it's not a coincidence that she died on the day America died and was found on the day that the seventh personality was killed off on September the 12th. And she's a black lady, and I think that represents some things that we will talk about a little later if we get to it, if we hopefully get to it. And I don't understand much more than this and how it relates to America in general, but it's related to America's death. The death of this young lady, the sad death of this young lady is related to that. And I wouldn't be surprised if her death was related to her connecting up with certain people online through social media. I hate that term, but I have to use it here. Through social media, and that person was the one who eventually killed her because she got involved in the social stuff, that matriarchal social stuff. And I wouldn't be surprised if that is what led to her, being dead. And her name Mooney, it has the word moon in it, and the moon is related to the matriarchal system. The sun is male, and the moon is female. The sun represents the shining of the male personalities, and the moon represents the shining of the female personalities. So the fact that her name points to the female personalities and to the matriarchal system. The matriarchal system is a system where the female personalities control things. The server and the organizer personalities, and the other three, the three male personalities are made to submit to the female personalities. Where judging, the visionary stuff, and conquering are all in the context of what the server and the organizer personalities want them to do. That's a matriarchal system. It's as simple as that. Let me also share about something else that happened related to America. So let me see if I can click. Find this story right now very quickly and share it here. Okay, again on thegaywaitpundit.com, on the 31st of October 2023, they posted this story. And the headline says, new police report reveals what the, quote, voices were telling the Lewiston mass shooter. So apparently, for some reason, I don't know why I didn't feel, I heard about this story and it just didn't draw my attention for some reason. I felt like, I don't know why, just, even though it was a big story, and it was whatever because I felt like it was related to America's death, and America's dead, so who cares? But the story was this shooter in Maine, in the state of Maine, who went, I forget where he went, and he went in there with a shotgun or something, and he started shooting up people. And I think he killed 14 people in this public place. And then they found him. There's controversy over whether there's some sort of cover up or whatever. Who knows? I don't know. But they found him dead. Apparently, he committed suicide. Apparently. They found him dead somewhere in some field or what, after he had done the shooting. And people are wondering if that's really the guy, because some people say that the guy that they found dead looked a little different from the guy that is shown in some video that was caught of him, short circuit video, I think, of him whilst he was in the midst of shooting and killing people. But it happened in Maine. And to me, it was like, oh, this reminded me of the hurricane that hit, for some reason, Hurricane Lee, as you may recall, that we talked about a lot in previous recordings. Hurricane Lee, that was doing its thing in the Atlantic Ocean as America was dying. Hurricane Lee represented the death of America. It came as an announcer of America's death. And as you may recall, Hurricane Lee ended up hitting Maine. When it finally hit made landfall in America. It was in the state of Maine, and it caused the death of one guy, age 51, and a lot of damage and flooding and stuff. And for some reason, this guy just reminded me of Hurricane Lee hitting Maine, and that's why I don't know why. Same story. Like it's a repeat of that same thing, so that's why I didn't pay attention to it. But it's interesting to me that the name of this guy is at least the guy that they are attributing as the killer is Robert Card, and I find that interesting because, as we've said multiple times in these recordings, I have something about the name Robert. Especially if it's on an American, if it's like a British person or someone from some other place, I'm not as bothered by the name, really. But if it's an American, I always go, ugh. If your name is Robert, it makes me think that you are a predator, like a wolf that is a predator trying to destroy all the victims, vulnerable victims you can find. And that's exactly what this guy, the shooter, did. You know, he just went in, I don't know if it was a shopping mall or wherever he went, and he started killing people like a predator, just going in like a hunter and a predator going in killing people. And so that's one thing. But the other thing that drew my attention Well, I think it will have to, we'll talk about that when we talk about the death of another person. There's a lot of death that, as we said at the beginning, we're talking about the deaths of a lot of people. And oh, the thing with this Robert Card is that at the beginning they thought that the Robert Card that had committed the shootings was another guy by the exact same name. And this other guy was apparently a registered pedophile. Let me see if I can read this here. So it says here, as the Gateway Pundit previously reported before Card's mugshot was released, several users on X jumped the gun and claimed Robert Card was a sex offender. The claims were made after it was discovered a Robert W. Card was listed on Maine Sex Offender Registry. However, the suspect in the mass shooting was Robert R. Card. So, in other words, when the name was released, people went online, did searches, and found this guy, this sex offender named Robert Card, but he was Robert W. Card. But this guy, the guy that is considered to have been the shooter, was Robert R. Card. And I find that interesting because there's this sex offender or pedophile. I'm not sure. I think he must have been a pedophile. And now we were talking a moment ago about this guy who was let go, this pedophile who was let go by this judge, and then there, then you, I don't know. I just all of this just seems so much of a like interconnected coincidence of things, like a network of things. So we have this guy getting released without being punished, this pedophile, and then there's a pedophile with the same name as the shooter who kills all these people, in Maine, and as I said, it kind of reminded me of Hurricane Lee hitting Maine when this guy did this did these shootings, so. Now I'm going to mention something, and I hope you'll see how related it is to this. So you may have heard of this story. It's kind of a very peculiar story, and it kind of was shocking to me when I read it. There was this there I didn't know that there was a hockey league in England. I think it's called the Elite Ice Hockey League. I'm not a hockey fan per se, so I don't even follow American hockey, much less European hockey. But there is a league there in England, and there was an American player named Adam Johnson, who died a gruesome death in the middle of a game recently. As another player from the opposing team fell, and he fell and he kicked his legs up, and the ice skate, the skates on his, on his foot, slashed the throat of Adam Johnson, who was nearby, and it just slashed his throat, and blood just gushed forth. And it was pretty gruesome, blood all over the place, and he died right there. They tried to revive him, but it was too late. He just, it's like someone had cut his throat with a knife, literally, and he died. And they attributed it to a freak accident and all that. So we wanted to share a little about this because there is a relevance here. So the story says it's on the Daily Mail, and it was posted on the 29th of October, 2023. And it says, who was ice hockey star Adam Johnson, and how did the Nottingham Panthers player die? So he played for the Nottingham Panthers, he had played in the in the National Hockey League here in North America. So let me just look for information about him here in this story. It says Adam Johnson, 29. He was young. Was an American professional ice hockey player who had signed to play in England with the Nottingham Panthers this year. He was born June 22nd, 1994, in Hibbing, Minnesota, a mining city in the north of the U.S. And he ended up playing. In the NHL for. He says here, his success earned him a place at the prospect development camp of the NHL side, the Pittsburgh Penguins, performing well enough to agree to a two-year entry-level contract in 2017. So I hope you will see the theme. Okay, he started playing professionally or signed a contract with the Pittsburgh Penguins of the National Hockey League, Pittsburgh Penguins. Okay. So in 2020, Johnson decided to move abroad. He played for the Swedish side Malmo Redhawks before returning to North America to ply his trade for Canadian side Ontario Reign. However, the forward's time was not done in Europe, moving again to represent German DHL side Augsburger Panther. Okay, so that's another. Okay, so Pittsburgh Penguins, and he played for the Augsburger Panther in 2022, and finally signing for the Nottingham Panthers for the 2023-24 season. So he died whilst playing the Sheffield Steelers. That was the opposing team. To me, it's all connected, because whenever I think of a team named Panthers, the first thing I think of, and I'm not making this up, this is a reality in my brain, that whenever someone says Panthers, the first thing I think of is Pittsburgh. And why? Because there's the University of Pittsburgh, which is obviously in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Their football team is called the Panthers, the Pittsburgh Panthers. And I remember as a kid, I don't know if they're that good anymore, but when I was a kid, they were one of the powerhouses in college football, American football in America. And I remember very vividly that when I started following American football as a kid, with awareness of what the game was and all that, and players and stuff, because you're very young, you don't know anything, but as you get a little older, then you become aware of there's this team and there's that team and there's this player and that player, and I became very aware of the Pittsburgh Panthers, not only because they were a powerhouse team, but because of Dan Marino, and if you're a follower of American football, you know who I'm talking about, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So Dan Marino played for the Pittsburgh Panthers, and that's also another reason why Pittsburgh and that team, the Panthers, is ingrained in my head. So it's interesting to me that Adam Johnson played for a team in Germany called the Augsburger Panther, and then he ended up playing for the Nottingham Panthers. And it's also interesting to me that he died whilst playing the Sheffield Steelers. And I find the name Steelers, I don't know why they chose that name. Maybe Sheffield was a steel town at some point, I don't know. But the thing is that when you say Steelers to me, I think of Pittsburgh immediately. Why? Because there's an American football team called the Pittsburgh Steelers, which were, the dominant team in the National Football League in America in the 1970s. They won four Super Bowls in the 1970s. And we have written on the website where these recordings are posted, we have written articles, actually on a recent article on the story of the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s and what they represented. And we talked about them versus the Dallas Cowboys and all this other stuff. So there's a very strong theme of Pittsburgh and the Panthers and the Steelers. And the thing is, As you may know, a panther is a black cat. It's black. The Steelers, their uniform is black. It's mostly black and with some gold in it, but it's black. They are known as the black and gold. And that their helmet is mostly black. I don't know if they've changed it because I don't follow American football anymore, but it was this black thing with like a logo, just one logo, and the other side of the helmet all black. So, most helmets in American football have like a logo on both sides, left side and right side. They only would only have it on the right side, I think. And the other side was always black. So there's this blackness theme to them. And in the article that where we talked a lot about them, we emphasized that connection to the black face. We on the website where these recordings are posted, we talk about the white face, the red face, the black face, and the green face. The white face is the face of the epiphany when you have a revelation about something new. The red face is the face where you go into conflict with other people because of that epiphany that you had, that revelation. You start fighting the people who don't yet see that truth, or the people who have been fighting, who people in positions of power who have been or authority who have been opposing the manifestation of that revelation that you just had. For example, like when what's his name? Copernicus said, "Oh, the Earth does not revolve around the Sun does not revolve around the Earth, but the other way around." He had an epiphany, and then he went into a red phase because he had to fight the authorities and the people who were opposed to that concept, and who had kept that concept from humanity. So you go into that red phase, and then in the black phase is when there's like a separation between you and the structures that have promoted the opposite of the revelation that you have, and you go into this loneliness and isolation period, and you're wandering in the wilderness during that black period. And then at the end, there's a green phase where you make an ultimate sacrifice, and you become like a radical person that commits like an ultimate sacrifice that can take many forms. And that's when you pay the final price to then unleash the eventual manifestation of that revelation, that epiphany you had in others in general. And in America, we kept saying on that website where these recordings are posted, got stuck in black. And it never made that crossing into the green phase. And that crossing implies a crossing a Jordan, a River Jordan, and we never did that crossing, and we got stuck in black. And the thing is, when people are stuck in black and they try to cross into the green or into green territory without really under, how can I say this? When they try to achieve what can be achieved by crossing into the green territory, but by staying black, like in other words, I want to achieve the results that will be achieved if I go green. But I want to achieve them without going green, if that makes any sense. It's like I want the results of going green without being green. And that leads to major disaster. An example that we share on the webs on that website, the website where these recordings are posted, and we posted this like a long time ago. One big example is Napoleon. Napoleon was also stuck in black, and he thought he could achieve green results, you could say, by staying black, and that's when he decided to invade Russia. And the story that was his undoing, his eventual undoing, and that leads to a disaster. There are two types of people who are stuck in black. Some try to go green and perish because it's utter foolishness to do so without being green, and others regress into the red stage. So it's very dangerous. If you want to stay stuck in black and you attempt to conquer things that can only be conquered by going green and doing the ultimate sacrifice, if you try to do that without embracing the ultimate sacrifice, you could say, and that ultimate sacrifice can mean many things, then you will suffer a kind of catastrophic failure. an embarrassing and humiliating defeat. And so there's a blackness to all the teams he played for. This theme, the Pittsburgh, the Panthers, the Steelers, you know, all black, 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 black. And then he ended up playing in Nottingham. And I'm not making this up. Every time you say Nottingham to me, aside from thinking of Robin Hood and all that, the second thing I think of when you say Nottingham to me is the color green. And I always associate it with a green face. And if you don't believe this, you can go to a posting we that we have mentioned recently on that website where these recordings are posted. It's called Giant House on the Meadow, and it was posted on September the 20th, 2006. I mean, that's how long ago it was. It was more than 17 years ago, and we talk about lots of things there. We talk about Meadows a lot, and we mention Nottingham 20 times. If you do a search of the word Nottingham, you're going to find 20 results of it. Nottingham or Nottinghamshire, Nottinghamshire. So the thing is that, and we keep saying how it's all related to greenness. And you can maybe go into the details of that. And in fact, there's even a mathematician who was born there called George Green, an English mathematician. A mathematician who made great contributions in physics and in mathematics. And so you can go there and see the details. But when I think of Nottingham, I think of greenness. And so there's this guy who is just enveloped in blackness, who then decides to play in a city that's associated with greenness. You see what I'm saying? It's like he was going into a place where he was not equipped to be in. He was trying to do green things with black weapons, if you catch what I'm saying. And that's why he died. I mean, I know that sounds so strange. It's because, see, these things happen and people say, oh, it's all coincidences and freak accidents and all that. But there's always an underlying metaphysical reason for all of this. It's not a coincidence. It all happens for a very exact reason. It's just that the exact reason is not that obvious, but it's happening for an exact reason. So he was in blackness trying to do green things. And it's the same thing with America. America got stuck in black. And every time an American tries to do green things while being stuck in black, he's going to get his throat slashed, figuratively or literally, just like Adam Johnson. And the interesting thing is that the guy who killed him, some say that it was not that accidental, because this guy has a history too, but the guy who ended up slashing his throat with his blade is a black man. Interestingly enough, and his name is Matthew Petgrave, and oddly enough, in the story where we that posting about the giant house on the meadow, we mention the name Matthew a lot. it's a very important part of the posting of that article or that that posting. Interesting. So I know it's not a coincidence. I still don't understand why his surname is Petgrave. That just makes me think of like a pet cemetery or something like that. A pet grave, a grave for a pet. And the first thing that comes to my mind is like these pets that America has held on to emotionally. You know, in a sense, you could say that these ideas of the founding fathers and the Constitution and all these are like these beloved pets they're very near and dear to the hearts of conservative Americans, and they never wanted to recognize the death of these pets that are in their hearts. It's like, in your hearts, you can have pets, like certain things that you attach yourself emotionally to that you don't let go of when you should sometimes. And so it's like America had all these pets, and the pets were dead. The pets were proved to be not fully connected to the truth. And instead of burying them, they kept holding on to them as if they were alive, because they just couldn't bear with the idea of burying their beloved pet. So they just kept him lying there, rotting away, but they just couldn't bury him, bury the pet. And that's why a guy called Matthew Petgrave ended up slashing his throat. And I think it represents all of that. So this death, the death of this guy is related to the death of America. If America had not died, I would dare say this guy would not have died either. It's as simple as that. It's all connected. And the fact that we were talking about the guy, the main shooter, this Robert Card, who allegedly killed all these people, 14, I think it was, which has a significance too. But this guy made me think of Hurricane Lee. And when Hurricane Lee hit Maine, because he did his killings in Maine. And you may recall, we mentioned in one of the earlier recordings, audio snippets, that Lee, the name Lee, means clearing in the woods, clearing, or meadow. So it's all related. And the thing is that's we're talking about deaths related to America. The other thing is that we also, there's another posting on the website where these recordings are posted, that is called Red and Black Operations, and it was posted on the 17th of October 2006. And in that posting, we mentioned Nottingham, and we talk about George Green. It says here something in the we mentioned the name Peter. I'm reading from this posting. Mention the name Peter twice in the context of Nottingham, George Green. It's a reference to the Meadow House posting. So in that Meadow House posting, we mentioned the name Peter twice in the context of Nottingham, George Green, and the delay in some people's ability to discern the green potential of others. This delay is related to the unwillingness to rise up as a green army to clean up the cadavers in the house. So it's all related. This was written without knowing all these stories 17 years later, but it's all related. And then it says here, if you're too dazzled by the greatness of humans, even as they lie as virtual cadavers, you will be unable to discern the hidden potential in the sea. And you will be negligent when you are assigned the task of enabling that potential. And so we talk about, if you're too dazzled by the greatness of humans, just like, you know, conservatives are dazzled by Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and James Madison and all these people, you know. And because of that, they can't see the potential, the hidden potential in the sea. And the sea represents the nations. And there were concepts coming from other places, like foreign concepts coming into the land of America to save America from its extinction, from its death. But these people were so dazzled by these great Americans from the past that they did not understand and see the potential of these strange ideas coming from like a foreign influence, shall we say. And that's what led to America's death and to its brutal death. And I think his death symbolizes how America died. You know, and people who were at the arena in Nottingham, because I think there were 8,000 in the audience watching, and there were kids there, and they all witnessed this gruesome death. You know, imagine someone getting their throat slashed and blood just splattering all over the place. That's how America died. You want an imagery of America dying, that's it right there. Especially conservatives, just with this willingness to, you know, we want to achieve green results with black attire, wearing black uniforms. And that's what happened to the January 6th people. It's exactly the same thing. They thought they could achieve things that can only be achieved with when you go green. But they were trying to do it whilst staying black. And that's why they ended up, you know, in the mess they're in right now. And that's why conservatives keep fighting with a black uniform. And it's as if the truth is saying, no, you have to turn in that black uniform and get a green one from me. And then you will fight. But the green one comes with a price. The green one comes with a radical mindset. Yeah, radical, that word that Trump hates so much. A radical mindset. And it comes with a decision that you're not going to compromise. It's all or nothing. You know, we die on the hill or we conquer the hill. There is no art of the deal. There's no negotiation. There's no nothing. It's you stand on principle and you're willing to do revolutionary things, things that shake up the whole structure. You're not there to put band-aids on things. You're there to obliterate what is wrong and to build a new foundation with ideas that seem strange, that seem illogical, that seem foreign, unnatural. But they are the ones that are actually based on truth. And when you get immersed in them, you go, oh my goodness, this is the truth. It becomes obvious once you see it, but you have to get off of your black attitude and go green. And it's interesting that all of this is, this mention of Nottingham and all that is made in the context of an article or a posting called, that we felt led to entitle, Red and Black Operations. Red and black without going green. And that's what America did. Stayed at red and black, never went green. That's why we died as a nation. We now really got to, we now really got to the, to the music thing, we'll share a couple of things, just to get started, because it's related, I think. Yes, I think it is related. Last Saturday, I felt very strange about sharing the posting or the recording that we shared, because it just felt very strange. And now that I think about it, it's like it's a very green recording. It's very radical. It's very it seems unnatural or strange or crazy, because green people, when you go into the green phase, you look crazy. You sound crazy. You act crazy. It's like there's something very, like, crazy about you. I don't know how else to say it. They are the people who come up with these crazy fractal ideas. That's what we call them on the website where these recordings are posted. Crazy fractal ideas. People who are radical, who just seem like disconnected from reality, but oddly enough, they're the ones who are most deeply connected to the reality, because they are tapping into the root of all of the whole thing. They're tapping into the root of it, into the very essence of things that are not seen on the surface. So this previous audio recording just sounded so strange, you know, playing songs and talking about songs and, well, how is that relevant? And I know a lot of people would go, yeah, that's not meaningful for me. I couldn't care less and blah, blah, blah. But no, the message is there. I hope this, that many of you who are listening to these are catching what is being said without being said, and all that. But as I was thinking about that, it just felt strange. Like, what, am I crazy? Like, did I do something that I was not supposed to do? And I was thinking about that. I was going to New York, on my way to the train station, walking towards the train station on that Saturday. And I was on my way. The thing is, these recordings are posted or recorded early on Saturday. But for reasons too long to explain, I have to wait until the late afternoon to go to New York to post them. So I was on my way to New York to, amongst other things, post the recording. And I was still thinking, I think I'm crazy. But as I was doing that, I suddenly saw these two ladies standing in front of a car, and they drew my attention. But I don't know if they were distractions, or I don't know. There's something very strange about these two women. I'm not sure if they were from the good side, quote unquote, or the dark side. Not sure. The thing is that they were standing next to a car, and I looked away from them because there was something that bothered me about them. Not sure what. Well, I think they were Hispanic. Let's put it that way. That bothered me very immediately, but very Hispanic. It's not just the physical look. It's, there's an aura when you're Hispanic, and not just by race. When you're Hispanic and your attitudes and your mindset, it's just like an aura. It's a very nasty aura. And I kind of saw it, but maybe I saw it wrong. Maybe they were not. I'm not sure. I don't know. The thing is that as I looked away from them, I looked to my left, and there was a car there. And the car had an unusual license plate. And I'm always drawn to, I don't know why, I just like to, when I see a license plate that's not from the state, like New York or New Jersey, I always feel led to look at it and to see the design, because every state has a different design for their license plates. And I looked and I said, wow, that's interesting. So I was trying to recognize what state that was from. And then as I got closer, I saw that it was from Ohio. And I've seen Ohio license plates, but this was very different from all the other Ohio license plates I've seen before. And then I saw Cuyahoga right at the top. The words Cuyahoga, Cuyahoga, Cuyahoga. And I said, oh, and I said, thank you. That's the confirmation. I know I'm not crazy. I know I'm not crazy now. And the reason why is because it's something I didn't mention. I don't know why I didn't feel led to say it. I wanted to say it, but I didn't get to it. I forgot, or something happened. And I'm going to read to you why that word was a confirmation to me that I was not crazy. When I was looking into the Fire Lake song that we talked about in the previous audio snippet, I went to Wikipedia to see the article on that song. There's an article on that song, and it said here, there's a section called reception. Reception as in how the song was received by the public. So it says here, music critic Maury Dean described the song as an ominous ballad about 4th of July fireworks. Dean praised the song's intensity, Seeger's voice, and the nifty minor chords the song uses. Dean speculated that the title may not be entirely figurative, as there may be a hidden reference to a Midwestern body of water which literally caught fire, the Cuyahoga River in Ohio, And I said, okay, so this fire lake thing is related to the Cuyahoga River in Ohio. And I said, I don't know what that means. It's like it just kept hitting me, but I wasn't sure what that was all about. And then when I saw that license plate, and for some reason, Cuyahoga was written on top of it, at the top part of it, and below, a little below, it said Ohio, and then the license plate number, of course. And I was going to take a picture of it, but I just felt strange about going back and taking a picture of the car, because especially because of those two Hispanic ladies. So I just kept going, but I and I knew, and the thing is, I my the other thing that I felt very or strange about was that I was talking about this song called Fire Lake. And when you say Fire Lake, and especially if you say it to a conservative Christian, they're going to say, oh, hell, the lake of fire where Satan's going to be, thrown at the end. So I was wondering, am I talking about hell? Fire Lake is this hell. And I'm quoting a song that's talking about hell. But no, but I knew that Fire Lake was not hell, it was something else. But this just helped to confirm, that talking about Fire Lake and crazy songs and things like that was not wrong. It was crazy, still crazy, but not wrong. There's crazy good and crazy bad. To me, was confirmation that the recording was crazy good, even if people don't accept it, if people find it too strange, because that's what green stuff does. It throws people off who are not ready for it, or who are not interested in going deeper, who are comfortable with the surface, who don't go to the root, who don't want to take the root and yank it out and put in a new foundation. So that was a thing. And the other thing we wanted to share is on Wikipedia too, when they talk about the history of Cuyahoga County. So as it turns out, I did not know this, that Cleveland, the city of Cleveland, the well-known city of Cleveland, is in a county called Cuyahoga County. So I had never, until I looked into this Fire Lake song, ever seen the word Cuyahoga. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right, or if it's Cuyahoga or Cuyahoga or Cuyahoga but I think it's Cuyahoga, that's how I'm gonna say it. So I had never heard that word ever in my life, or paid attention to it until last week. As it turns out, if I had grown up in Cleveland, I would be very familiar with the word. There's a Cuyahoga River and a Cuyahoga County, and that's where Cleveland is. But what we wanted to mention here, and it's very interesting, and I'm not going to say it. You may want to read it if you want to, but turns out that the guy that we I don't know if you remember, we kept talking about a fellow named Thaddeus Stevens, from the 19th century in America, one of the, I would dare say, 20 greatest Americans of all time, or maybe top 10, I'm not sure, but definitely top 20. And how he was a radical man, talk about greenness, a man who was radical through and through, not compromising. Who made the ultimate sacrifice with his very life? His whole life was a sacrifice for the cause of freedom for black people. And we wanted the contrast. We kept saying we were going to talk about the second person, the second per and to contrast Thaddeus Stevens against this other guy, who represents almost not the opposite, but a variation of it that, in a sense, makes it the opposite of Thaddeus Stevens. But we never have never gotten around to him, but we hopefully will get to talk about him as we close out our talk about American history and all that stuff. But turns out that guy that I don't want to mention by name quite yet, he's mentioned in that section. the history section of Cuyahoga County. If you go to the Wikipedia article on Cuyahoga County and you go to the history section of it, at the bottom of it, they mention that guy. He was born in, it says here, in what was at that time Cuyahoga County's Orange Township. And I know this is all related. And this guy is related to the death of America in a very, very significant way. When we get to talk about him, you will see how, like, oh my goodness, it's like, yeah, he is very connected to the death of America. It's not a coincidence that we were leading up to talk about him as America was dying. And now it's not a coincidence. This guy was born in Cuyahoga, which is related to Fire Lake, something connected to greenness. And this guy had a death that was kind of tragic, almost like, well, not, yeah, in a way, kind of like, in a different way, but, you know, like Adam Johnson, the hockey player who died. An unnatural death. And by the way, he died at the age of 29, and 29 is a very, very green number. Very green. It's a number of earthquake, and greenness is associated to earthquakes because green people shake the foundations of the earth. That's what they do. They shake, they're getting to the root of the thing at such a deep level that they shake the foundations of the earth. So, one final thing that we want to share, and then we will get to hopefully talk about the second part of the songs in another recording, is I want to read something from the website where these recordings are posted. And that article, if you want to look it up, it's called Moon Overshadowed. Let me see if I can get to it right now. Moon Overshadowed. It was posted a long time ago, on the 7th of January, 2010. So it's over 13 years ago. And there's a section in there called Eternal Fire. And we say a whole bunch of stuff. And in that, we ended up mentioning something, kind of like to kind of rub it into the conservative, matriarchal Christians in America, and it's this passage of the Bible that I know, you know, I know it's like conservative Christians don't read their Bible. They just carry it as a symbol of something. I don't know, a symbol of religiosity, status, or moral cleanliness. I don't know what, pardon my French, what the hell they carry it around for. But they don't really read it. And if they read it, it's always surface stuff. They just read the surface. They don't understand what they're reading. And they don't care. So because they don't want to go green, you know, they want to stay red or black, but they don't want to go green. So just to rub it into their faces, we felt led to quote a passage of their beloved Bible, and it says in Isaiah 33 verses 14 through 17, and I'm reading from the King James Version. It says, "The sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness hath surprised the hypocrites. Who among us shall dwell with the devouring fire? Who among us shall dwell with everlasting burnings?" And then the answer is in verse 15. "He that walketh righteously and speaketh uprightly, he that despiseth the gain of oppressions, that shaketh his hands from holding of bribes, that stoppeth his ears from hearing of blood, and shutteth his eyes from seeing evil. He shall dwell on high. His place of defense shall be the munitions of rocks. Bread shall be given him. His water shall be sure.
Thine eyes shall see the king in his beauty. They shall behold the land that is very far off. But the point that we were trying to make, amongst other things here, was this passage of the Bible says, it's asking, who's going to dwell with the devouring fire? Who is going to dwell with the eternal or everlasting burnings? So you'd go, oh, well, you know, if you ask that question to a Christian, a conservative American Christian, you go, who's going to dwell in with the devouring fire and dwell with the eternal burnings? I'm pretty sure they're going to say, oh, well, you know, all the people who didn't receive Jesus Christ as their Savior and bad people, and the more evil they are, the more eternal burnings they're going to have, and they're going to be devoured by the fire for all of eternity. Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, Mao Zedong, and all these people, Marx, and all these are going to be burning in hell. Yes, they are the answer to your question. And then, according to the God of their Bible, the answer is not, that's not the answer to his question. The question is, the answer is, he that walketh righteously and speaketh uprightly, he that despiseth the gain of oppressions, that shaketh his hands from holding of bribes. It's like saying, oh no, I ain't doing no art of the deal. No, like quid pro quo, Clarice. No, I'm not going to do this and take a little bit of this bribe just to, no. It's like, no, sorry. No, I am not going to compromise. And by the way, the compromising or not compromising can take many forms, and do have that, do bear that in mind. Sometimes it may look like you're compromising, but you're not. This would be a topic for a whole recording, but the thing is, but in your heart, you are walking in the truth and you are not yielding one inch. But that doesn't mean that, for example, if I go to the supermarket and buy groceries, but they sell certain things in that supermarket that I don't agree with, the fact that I'm buying there does not necessarily mean that I'm compromising my principles. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes you know you don't go there. Like, I don't go to McDonald's, for example, my personal thing. I don't go there because they hired a guy a long time ago, and they have this history of supporting old bastard and liberalism and all that. And I go, no, I don't want to go there. Even though I sometimes yearn for a Big Mac, I go, no, I'm not compromising there. But then I go to other places and I buy there, and maybe they're not perfect, quote unquote, but I'm not compromising myself. So it varies. But the thing is that in general, you have this attitude. There are certain places I don't go to. I don't go to Starbucks because one day I sat down and I wanted to visit one of the websites I visit. I noticed, you know, on their Wi-Fi, and I couldn't access it. And then I tried to access other websites, and they were fine. But the ones that I wanted to visit, they had blocked out. I said, you know, these worthless sons of bitches, they are blocking me. And that was like the straw that broke the camel's back, because other things had happened. And now every time I go by those Starbucks, they're always having the homosexual arrogance flag, you know, there, even when it's not Homosexual Arrogance Month. And, you know, the liberalism just oozes out of them. So I wouldn't touch a Starbucks nowadays with a 10-foot pole. So it varies. What I'm trying to say, it varies. But the thing is, these are the people who are going to be in the everlasting burnings, in the devouring fire. And that's not denying hell. Don't misunderstand what I'm trying to say. It's just saying that just because there's fire doesn't mean that it's evil. Because doesn't your Bible, conservative Christians, say that God is consuming fire? So those who are going to be with him forever are going to be in fire. Just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, in your Bible, it talks about three guys who were in the fire, and then there was a fourth man who looked like the Son of God. It says there, who was walking amongst them. He wasn't protecting. That fourth guy, according to the Bible, that appeared there, was not there to shield them from the fire. Like, oh, I'm going to protect you from this bad fire. No, he was walking around in the fire like he was comfortable in the fire. And the other three were walking in the fire just like he was. So it's talking about a union with a being who is consuming fire. And that's a good thing. And that's why there's a hell. If you see it from that perspective, from the Christian perspective, of your Christian Bible, conservative Christian, it makes sense. That's why the people who are not, who reject everything about the truth, end up in the other fire. Because that was the destiny of man, to be in the fire. It's just, what fire do you want to be in? And then there's going to be some sad people who are going to be in between, but no fire either way. Which is kind of depressing. But in a sense, everything that was about them will go to the lake of fire, the one that you shouldn't go to. If you see it from the perspective of your Bible, conservative Christian, I'm talking from your perspective, from the perspective you claim to have. But to me, this was, when I realized this, I said, oh yeah, I'm not crazy. When I was talking about Fire Lake, it was not talking about the devil and hell and talking about, no, it's something else. And the green people are aiming for that other fire. They're aiming to be, you know, like the same thing, be in that fire that's mentioned in that passage that I just quoted to you. That's where the green people go, want to be, in that devouring fire, in that everlasting fire. But the good one, the good fire, that's Fire Lake. And the article is called Moon Overshadowed. And it kind of makes me think again of that lady, the young lady that sadly died in L.A., whose surname was Mooney. So she was Mooney. She was leaning towards the moon instead of shying away from it. So the restoration of America and the earth required the overshadowing of the moon, the tearing down of the matriarchal structures, which required going green, and then we would have achieved all the things we wanted to achieve. But all the things conservatives wanted and more would have been achieved. But they didn't want to, so they tried to achieve green results without taking the green uniform. And that's why they got butchered. That's why you have all these January 6 prisoners. That's why America died. Because they were constantly dealing with surface things, never wanting to shake the foundations of the earth, which is what green people end up doing. And I think that is the overriding theme of all the things we talked about in this recording. People who don't go green, who are constantly avoiding dealing with the root of things, just dealing with symptoms constantly, and then who try to achieve green results whilst staying black and then suffering catastrophic deaths, just like Adam Johnson did. And all because they didn't put their pet in the grave. They didn't want to bury the cadaver. It was a pet of their heart that they just clung to. And that's why they end up dying. Thank you very much for listening, and hopefully we will talk about the rest of the music stuff in the next recording. Thank you very much.